You are listening to Lightning Strikes Thrice, a JRPG Games Club podcast. This is a special episode. We're interviewing two of the developers of Wolfstride. I am your host, Chris Taylor, and with me is...
Ryan Beatty.
So I'm Otavio, for it's my Brazilian name. So I am the director, writer, and artist for Wolfstride, and now Zetzillions.
I am Paulo. I am the lead animator for Wolfstride, and now I'm the lead artist and animator for Zetzillions.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for having this interview with us. We really loved your game, Wolfstride. Very excited to check out Zetzillions, and it was really great of you to come on and chat with us about it.
Awesome. Thanks for having us, guys. This is really awesome, and we love to talk about our projects and everything, so this is great for us, yeah.
This will be our first interview because it's our first game by someone who's not Square Enix or a developer that folded 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Just to start, like, we've really liked Wolfstride. How did it do for you guys commercially? Are you, like, happy with, like, how it sold and everything like that? Like, guys are making Zetzillions, so.
Yeah, so it's been kind of a struggle, I guess. Because we didn't sell well at first. I think we can say that we kind of flopped at the start, at the launch. It was not what everyone was expecting. But since it was our first game, we didn't know about it. So it was like, for us, it was a huge success. It felt like a success. But then we realized that we... just fell into that gray area, you know, where most games fell in, I guess. So we didn't have any profit until now. So it's almost, 3 years after the launch of Wolfstride. So we finally got to profit now, and it was because the Crunchyroll partnership we had. You know,
oh,
so Crunchyroll helped us a lot and put our games in mobile. So that's that, you know. And now we're able to finally get some of the profits that we earned from Wolfstride. Yeah.
If there is an audience of people who would love Wolfstride, it's people logging into Crunchyroll.com.
Yes. How did the Crunchyroll partnership happen?
Well, they reached out to us, you know. So it was really unusual and weird that we are there with the five games that they chose to open their game vault, you know.
Wow.
So yeah, they really chose us out of the blue. I don't know exactly where they found our game or anything like that, but seems like they really like it.
Yeah, I mean, your genuine love of mecha anime comes through so strongly in Wolfstride. So I'm glad that someone at Crunchyroll found you, because it does seem like a really good fit.
Yeah, we're very happy about that, really.
Yeah, 1 of 5 is like huge. That's like beginning of the App Store type, like visibility.
Yeah, it's really big for us.
So one of the big questions we had when playing, I was trying to take notes. It took a long time to take notes to make an episode of Wolfstride, a thing I was surprised by and no one else was. But the thing I noticed was that the game like came to vary a lot from the script that's available on Steam. What's up with that? How did that happen?
All right, so I kind of wrote that thing like 5 times or even more, you mm-hmm. know. The first draft was from 2016, I think. That was the first draft of the script. Yeah. So for the final script, we made some changes even as we were playing in it and checking it out. So we could change lots of stuff before the VO process started, you know. And there was a lot more of dumb shit before. I don't know if I can swear.
Yeah, you can definitely swear.
This is a swearing-friendly podcast.
Oh, yeah. So it is still a bit silly at some parts, but it was way sillier, maybe. It was way cringier. Yeah. So that version that came with the game there is already a version that was very fixed in many aspects, you know. Mm-hmm. And the rest is just we chose to change it to fit with the vibes of the game, you know. So there's a lot of things that we cut and inserted there just to make the story work, really.
Sure. Did you work with an editor at all when you were doing these kind of on-the-fly changes, or was that you and the team kind of making the decisions yourself as you were kind of doing the rewrites?
Right. Yeah, so to be honest, I was mostly alone for this process. I didn't have an editor, and sometimes I struggle to have someone to read the script. And I think most of the editing for Wolfstride was made during the recording of the VO sessions, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really crazy. And it wasn't the idea to have VO for the whole game. That was some crazy idea from our producer that arranged all the stuff for us, and then he bailed from Ralph Fury.
Oh my god.
And then we recorded all the voices and all the stupid shit that I wrote for every character, you know. So there were some weird, you know how weird some dialogues are. And yes, the guys at the studio, at the recording studio, they were cracking at some jokes, and they were saying, man, this is the best game ever. This is the best project ever took part in. Because it was so, I don't know, it was so different with all the jokes, yes, and stuff that we did there, you know. But some things sounded jarring for English speakers, because we are from Brazil and our native language is Portuguese. But I write in English since I was 14, because I didn't want anybody to read my stuff. So I wrote everything in English, and not everybody can read in English here. So that's why I ended here. And so the guys from the VO team, the studio called Om UK, they're from UK, I guess, London. And they helped us a lot while reading through and recording the voices. I think that's where most of the editing came through for Wolfstride, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, the voice acting cast really sells some of those characters and some of those lines, and it really added to the game. I'm not usually a person who likes games that are voice acted all the way through, but I do think that it really worked for Wolfstride. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's interesting because a lot of those like differences add up a lot and like change the focus of the plot pretty heavily in a way that I think is very positive around the end. So that's like very interesting to hear that it was mostly during recording that the change happened.
Mm-hmm.
You guys mentioned that you're this is a question not on the list, that you guys are from Brazil, and how did that influence the things that you wrote? There's a particular relationship, a particular to like oil production that the game is very interested in, that I found very interesting as an American, where we export all of our oil and then buy it back later.
Yeah, yeah. I think that oil part is more of a influence from Metal Gear, really, because I wanted to do something like Metal Gear and talk about the war and stuff like that. But I'm a dumbass and I don't know much about war and stuff. And I didn't have much of the time to research that, or else I did, but I didn't do much of a good job there. But what I can say is here in Brazil, we do love Japanese stuff. So most of us grew up with Japanese anime and stuff like Yu Yu Hakusho. And Knights of the Zodiac, I think you call it. Most kids of the 90s there, they grew up with those anime, you know. So we're heavily influenced by anime at some point. Well, part of us. I wouldn't say everybody here, but also we played a lot of pirate games because we. Most of us didn't have the cash to buy games, and so there's that. I think most of our culture there is represented by the fact that the guys kind of don't have any money there, because here we're struggling with some stuff like that, jobs and all. I think maybe everywhere, but here in Brazil, I don't know. I grew up like that, you know. So we're always struggling to have some money to eat or do anything. And everybody I know is more like that, you know. So most of the characters were based on my friends and family. And it was really fun. You know, funny because one of the reviews said that the characters and everybody there is dysfunctional. And maybe I just know dysfunctional people, and I am so. I think it's more like that, you know. There's few things I think that I did on purpose, like saying tapioca and other stuff from our culture, really. But most of everything that we did there is a homage to Japanese anime, really.
Sure. Yeah, I can feel that for sure. So I noticed, it sounds like you wrote the script in English and it was voiced in English. And then obviously, because you're from Brazil, the game is also available in Portuguese. But there are six other languages that Wolfstride supports. Did you have any part in the localization process to those other languages, or were those shipped out, or what did that process look like?
All right. Yeah. So, the first thing I remember is our producer reached out to us and asked, what languages, we wanted to localize the game, in. And I said, every possible language you can do, right?
yeah.
But then we just saw the budget for that and start cutting things off. Mm-hmm. So we chose the languages that had more friction with our demo and stuff that we had done until that point, I guess. So that's how we chose the languages. And for working with the localization teams, is more like we hired a company that did most of the localization. I think only the Japanese localization was made for a different team.
Okay.
So I think that's how this worked, yeah. For us. And the Brazilian localization, we took care of that, yeah.
Sure. Okay, that's awesome. So, getting into the story a little bit, one of the most impressive parts to me is that Shade, as a character, really wants to be a better person, but he continues to do shitty, selfish, cowardly things throughout the course of the game. And that I've seen other anime and also other small indie games where it's either tuned way too hard one way or the other. Either the guy is way too shitty to even care about wanting to see their journey, or all of their shittiness is in the past and you only see them turning the corner and being better. And I wanted to know a little bit more about if you had to work at balancing that, or if Shade just kind of came naturally, because he was such an interesting character to follow, because I was so mad at him sometimes and then also felt really deeply for him as well.
Yeah, that's a good one, because I'll start from the start. So I met a guy who was he drew hentai, right? And this guy said to me one thing that I will never forget, that if you want to write a story about yourself. And he was talking about you write like start with you being a baby and growing up and all that, you know, like an exercise. But I took that to heart, but I kind of changed the things the way he said. And I thought I should write something that I'm very familiar with. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's why Shade is a screw up. He's like, he's the closest character to me in some ways, you know. So it came down naturally, because many of the questions that Shade has, these are questions that I have as well, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if that is really clear in the game, but I wanted to be like more of a guy that is thinking about suicide or in the end of his life in some way, but he has such a great time with such great people that I wanted to change his perception of the world by the end of the game, you know. So I think most of the things Shade does came naturally, the way that he acts and all. I didn't want him to be too much of an asshole, but as you see him, I think most people think that he is going to be some kind of a guy, and deep down he's something different, you know. It's like he's trapped inside his masculinity in some way as well, so he can't be too, I don't know, too kind, or say he loves people without swearing and all that. So it's like he's a victim of how he was raised, I guess, as well.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
He's like, the balance is like really well achieved, because he comes off as a person rather than like a character where things are amplified for effect.
I try to be very honest with the story. So I don't like to plan ahead too much what characters will say or everything. It's like when I write a dialogue, generally is more like a character starts and the other responds and then it goes, you know. I never know what they're gonna say, and sometimes I'm surprised by something that they reveal, you know. But it's like playing table RPG with yourself in some ways.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's really fun.
Speaking of that kind of honesty, like, I'm a very depressed kind of guy. You can tell because I'm making a podcast. And I think the game nails, like, a very specific type of regret-based depression that you, like, grow into as you get older and accumulate that kind of regret. And, like, I'd just like to hear a little bit about how that came through, right? Like, do you have like an interesting experience or relationship with that? Because like, it seems very, very well observed.
Oh, yeah, thanks for that. I think that's not well thought on my side. It's more like that I was trying to solve some problems that I had for me. Mm-hmm. I was trying to answer some questions, you know. That's why the white door and the black door are there. I don't know if you guys remember that.
But yes.
It's basically when I was doing the game, I was trying to answer this question as well. Like, if I had the chance to go through a door and everything I know just disappears, I don't exist, and nothing matters anymore. It's, you know, if I had this chance, what would I have to grow through to change my mind to not choose this door, you know? So that's the whole journey, I guess, for me. I wanted Shade to have the choice that I didn't have. So, yeah, it's not like a double ending, you know? People come there and think that if you go through a door, you're going to see things. It's not that. It's just if you had the chance, you know, to just throw it all out, you know, would you do it? Because I don't think you would do it for Shade, because you want to see his story, you know.
Yes.
But yeah, I wanted to give players that chance, and I wanted players to experience everything that Shade goes through and see deep who he is, you know. So I think most of the things about depression or the hard stuff he goes through or went through and how he's changed, I try to be honest with the experiences I had from life. Really, I didn't think that much through. I didn't want to lecture the players or find an answer or give them an answer for the question, but this is something that I'm always trying to answer, you know, like, what the hell are we doing here? Why the hell am I doing here doing these things, you know? It would be just way easier if I wear nothing. I wear nothing and I wouldn't have to do anything, you know? And I wouldn't mind because I wouldn't think or something like that. So why, you know? And that's the question for Shade there, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you nailed that because, yeah, I really felt the power of that choice. Absolutely. And what's interesting about that choice is that it's not, like you mentioned, it's not like there are two equal endings here kind of choice. And so one of the doors, it's like you can decide that your game is over if you choose the other door here, but really it's like there's, because like you said, players are going to want to see Shade's story kind of keep going because we followed him for so long. I really appreciated how it wasn't just there are multiple endings now. You give the player a choice, but it's kind of a non-choice at the same time.
Yeah,
it's like a personal choice rather than a narrative choice, which is like an interesting way to do it.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject of writing, one of our listeners wanted to know, what was your favorite joke to write in the game? And for Paolo, what is the animation you liked the most to put in that you think is the funniest?
Well, I don't know. I don't really remember much of the jokes, but during recording, there was this joke with the tiger character, the guy with the black power who piloted the jazz bass.
Yeah.
And he talked a bunch and he said something like, I want to rematch. Yeah, and Shade said something, not gonna happen, and said, okay. And as response, you know.
Yeah.
So it was just a stupid line, but the guys recording the VO, they were cracking every time, and they were making all the actors hear those lines again and again, and laughing out loud. So I think it's my favorite joke because it's just stupid, and it was the one that hit the most hard. I think the hardest.
My favorite
guys.
Is all the milks.
Oh, yeah. I love all of the milk jokes, too. Yeah.
The milks. Do you have a favorite joke, Paulo? I don't know if you remember anything.
Oh, jokes. I don't remember the jokes. Also. but you asked about the animation, if there was one I remembered, right?
Yeah, what's your favorite one?
Yes.
I think like the one that I think it's funniest one I animated and I was kind of laughing while animating it was the one, I don't remember the name of the character, but it was a drunken guy in the bar. I think Ulta might remember it better.
Oh, but yeah, it's Gonzo.
Gonzo. So I animated Gonzo and he had to like walk drunk. And I never, I was like a animator, starting animator, you know. Mm-hmm. And making a walk cycle was a little hard yet to me. But when I did these guys, I had so much fun. It was so many frames and like every time I, oh, he could do this and that and that. And like every time I did that and I showed Ulta, he said, oh, that's nice. And I we were laughing and doing that.
Yeah, Paulo did some great things. Like you can say that Bounty Hog's butt, you know, that brown butt.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was something that Paulo created. I never imagined that. So he did the back for the curtain and added that, that gorgeous butt that he... keep talking about, making jokes about it. It was Paulo's doing that.
I just wanted him to have some juice, you know?
Extremely cursed, because once you point it out in the game, like, you never not notice it every time you go talk to Hog.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, there's Hog, and there's Hog's butt.
Oh.
It,
yeah, the
it also... Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say that the thing about the when the game over happens and you see the Earth exploding, that was a miscommunication between me and Paulo as well. Because I said the game, like the world was going to end figuratively on in another way, and Paulo just understood that if the game was over, the world would end. And I thought, oh, well, there's it. Let's do that. If you mess up, we explode the Earth for no reason, and that's game over. Yeah,
that's great.
Way bigger, to be honest. Like, got big Chrono Trigger energy.
Yeah.
When we were playing, there was we're gonna move on to like game stuff now because that's all we have for script. We're playing this. There's like a bunch of times where it seemed like content had been cut for scope. Big example is like the hyper detailed church on the Rain City map, like everywhere else you can visit. Is there anything that you guys had really wanted to include that had to get cut for time or budget?
Oh yeah, I think there are lots of stuff there that we wanted. I think the thing that would make the most difference there would be we had a system of traps planned for the battle. So we could place traps in the tiles for the board there in the battle, and enemies would step in or a cowboy would step in. Some environmental stuff in the tiles there, you know. We were planning that, but we had to cut it. We also had to cut like a system for the mini games. We had a mini game where you would raise a corpse plant, and that was cut as well. We had a mini game for grooming the cats that you left and yeah, and taking them to contests of beauty and stuff like that.
Hell yeah.
Amazing.
So we had to cut that. I think for me, the most weird stuff that was cut and nobody really talked about it is something about the virtual battles. There, there is a sentence, a phrase that Nebraska says, when you approach an NPC, you will beep and you can fight this NPC and all that. So we made a tutorial for this. It is in the game. Nebraska talks about it, but it never happens. You never, nothing beeps when you approach other people and you can't fight them in virtual battle, you know? So yeah, we had a lots to cut there. And the church thing is, I wanted to have the church for the battle with Wormageddon there. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be a sequence where you would go around the city and look for it and find him at the church. So it was planned for that, but it also never happened. So we had to make it work with cinematics and cutscenes, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was that. Also, I think a big chunk was cut because all the thing about the Sayuki and the Akala, the ones from yes. the Rumbler and Gambler, mm-hmm. they are secretly hosting like a gambling house at night. So you would go there and gamble and you would see another side of these characters because they are running away from the mafia because they stole from the mafia and all that shit, and they are doing gambling operations right there in the basement, you know. So that thing was never there, and we even recorded some lines of VO for that, but yeah, never made that, it again.
That makes a lot of sense because yeah, Sayuki in particular, it felt like there was more there with that character, so that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
So your team is really small, and the combat like stays pretty balanced and engaging for the whole game. And I was just wondering what like balance and playtesting looked like.
Oh yeah. So we had two game designers working on that for Wolf's Ride at the time. I think our whole team was like 9 people. We are about 12 now. Mm-hmm. So it was mostly Marcelo, the game designer at the time. He made most of the battles. He had a lot of spreadsheets and stuff there. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, he balanced most of it. I helped him with creating some skills and stuff, but I didn't have much time to test it, really. So there are still some exploits in the game and stuff like that, you know. I think we didn't have as much time as we wanted to test out some battles, you know. Mm-hmm. Most of the reviews, they talk about how Angel Breath is the one people like the most. Maybe the other battles are somehow easier or stuff like that, you know. And I think we were short for time, so we didn't have the time to mix the skills and animations we really wanted for that. Mm. And since this was our first project as well, I feel now like we could have done more with what we had at the time, you know. But back then we didn't have that much experience. So, sure. Yeah, most of the testing I did and our other game designers did, it was when we were playing the game through, testing other stuff, even so, you know, and we didn't have anyone specialized, specialized tester. And
wow.
We didn't work with our community as we're doing right now, you know. So mm-hmm. we only got player feedback from our demo, and the demo ended up very different from the game, you know. So yeah, I think this is how it ended the way it was, you know. We made what we found was fun, but we didn't have much of a direction.
It turned out really well given the level of like expressivity you have in terms of like how you lay out your thing, right? Like you're just overpowered enough no matter what you want to do to like feel really good doing whatever strategy you pick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is something that we wanted, you know. We didn't want players to play in a certain way. So even if you make the weirdest builds, you can get away with that still, you know, long range builds and short range and all that stuff.
Yeah. I really like how the stances for the pilot played into that too. It was like it was like a signal to me that like, oh, there are multiple ways to build out your mech in here. Look at these pilot stances. They're going to like kind of guide you towards specific builds with the bonuses that they give. That was a really great move, at least for me.
Oh yeah, I love that system really. And also the pineapple stuff, the drawings there with the masochist. I think the masochist one is my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That one was great.
That one is very strong.
Yes.
One of the things we definitely noticed the most is that, like, a Wolfstride is definitely a game about from people who just love media. And, like, we love media. Tell us about what your favorite media, some of your favorite media is, whether it was a direct inspiration or not.
All right. Yeah, I think Wolfstride is a mixture of everything that I like in my entire life, you know. So most things comes from animes, really. You have Cowboy Bebop there. As a
yes.
really good reference, you know, it's there. Red Line, it was, I don't know if you saw Red Line, that movie from Takeshi Koike.
I watched it again this racing. Weekend.
Oh, yeah. So I love the art style for that. So I try to pick some of those references, you know. But really, I think there's, I don't know, any anime that I watched at the time. I played a lot of Persona. I played Persona 3 and 4 while developing Wolfstride. And I think that made me a bit entitled to make huge dialogues. Because I thought, oh yeah, these guys can get away with that, so I can too. Nah?
If Atlas can do it.
Yeah. But there was also a lot of K-drama because I really couldn't do watch most things because I was getting a lot of anxiety for watching I don't know, action movies or action playing action games or even Persona at some point. So I was binge watching K-dramas like crazy. And yeah, some inspirations and things. Well, they made it into the script, you know. I think.
Oh yeah,
I think K dramas made me a better person. At the end of it, you know.
Interesting.
Because I really learned to care about people, and so I was suffering. I was going through the same thing as Shade was going through, I guess. You know.
Yeah. And I love Shade's little PowerPoint presentation about K drama when he's talking to Jack. That was so funny to me.
Oh yeah, I love that dialogue, and this is one that I didn't see. How it was recorded, because I was in another session and we were recording the voice for Sekishusai, so the Japanese voice, and the voice actor is, I forgot his name, but it's the Japanese one, you know. He has a strong accent, and he is really awesome, and it was super fun because he's like 80 years old. And he's very elegant and respectable. And he was saying a lot of fuck, fuck. And, you know, he was swearing a lot because of the script. You know, we're having such a good time. And then when it ended, I came back to the session and they were recording the K-drama dialogue. And everybody was laughing like crazy there and cracking. And and they said, oh, this guy is really serious about his K-drama now, right? So it was amazing, really. But I do love that. But is complete bullshit, that K-drama curve and all that stuff,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I have not watched a lot of K-dramas, so I totally believed it. I was like, oh, yeah, this must be the arc of all K-dramas, obviously. I bought it completely.
Yeah, I think the best ones are made that way, in my opinion, yeah.
So you mentioned being really inspired by anime and how, you know, that was a lot of what you had access to in Brazil. Is there something about mecha anime that draws you in? What's your favorite part about anime and mecha anime in specific, if you've got something about that?
All right. So I think I didn't really like any mecha animes at the time for Wolf's Right There. Like, I watched a lot of animes, but they never stuck with me. I think that's part of the reason why I wanted to do Wolf's Right. Because I never really was too fond of, like, Evangelion fan service or stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of annoyed me, even for thinking top of Gurren Lagann, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think fan service really killed some stuff for me there. I know there are lots of fans for that, but and I don't judge, but it's not my kind of thing. If you go for my favorite animes of all time, I would say like Cowboy Bebop maybe, but the best one for me thinking there is Ergo Proxy. I don't know if you guys saw Ergo Proxy.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I've seen it.
I kind of love that, and also Samurai Champloo. So it is more, I wanted more of, I like characters with existential crises or they're trying to answer something really.
Right.
So, and connect. And I think Evangelion does this, but at the time I didn't have the knowledge for that, because afterwards I watched the three movies from Evangelion, and I think it's a masterpiece. I think it's the definitive mecha experience for me.
Yeah.
You know, because it ain't so much about the mechas, but it's more about the pilot and the relationship he has with the mecha. Like, if you're not piloting, then what the hell are you, know? That's the question that I wanted. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think I was more inspired by that, you know, more than the action parts and everything. I was craving to write the parts where the characters develop and deepen their bonds with each other, you know. So,
totally. That's
more than
that's really interesting to hear, and really cool. Honestly, it's funny. I am a reluctant mecha fan, but it's usually because it's like, I don't really care about the robots. I care about the relationships, and so I also think that's probably part of why I love this game so, Wolfstride, so much as well, because it nails that existential crisis piece really well.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, we try to do that, really. Yeah.
So I'm interested, what was the art to animation pipeline like?
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. I don't know how the hell we survived that, because I was drawing everything on pencil. Then I scanned the art, and Well, I used Illustrator to transform everything into vectors. Then I would paint everything in Photoshop and give it all to Paulo. And then Paulo can say how hell it was to animate all that stuff.
It was crazy. Ota is like, he's very crazy about all his creative process. Most of the time he asked me to animate this and that and do work on this and that. And like, I was animating as crazy, lots of animation. And then he looked at me and said, we won't use this animation for this part of the game. And then I think like we have more than 30 minutes of pixel art animation that we didn't use in the final game.
Wow. And
it was so many animations that I did. And this part of the process, the beginning of the Wolfstride, the opening scene, we didn't have a process to make frame by frame animation high quality.
And
like we did like he said. I did the frames, sent to him. He did the final art of these frames on Illustrator and Photoshop and sent me back so I could mount everything, like assemble everything in an animation program software, and then we exported in video to put it in the game. It was like a big mess. We took around 2 weeks to make that punch of Godworm punch, where he punches and then Killer bites the bomb.
Holy shit, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And then when we were better at this process in the final steps of the game, Ota said to me, we need an opening. And he gave me a storyboard. I started working on the storyboards and looking at him and said, man, this is like too many minutes of animation. I don't know how we're going to do it. And in the final thing was I took that storyboard and did everything the simplest way possible. And we did that opening took the same amount of time as the punch of Godworm. Was 2 weeks for both.
Wow, that's insane. That's wild.
Yeah. Don't know how we survived.
Yeah, and Paulo can say, but all of the mechs that we did, they were not rigged. They didn't have an animation system. So Paulo had to make... Or did we switch? Did we use bones for the animations? Because at the beginning, we didn't have bones for the animations.
Yeah, we didn't know that there was this system that simplified the animation process a lot. Because I didn't use Unity to animate. I didn't know how to use Unity to animate. So it was like a process. If you were like trying to make cutout animation in Photoshop, you know, like you put everything inside a layer, inside a layer, inside a layer, and then move everything so everything works together. It was hell.
It's amazing that you were like adapting and changing the process in like during the course of the game, because the game feels so complete. You know, it doesn't, it's like, you know, you can tell that it was made by a tiny team who is very passionate, but it doesn't feel like, oh, the animator was learning a totally different way to animate while also animating this game. So that's crazy. That's cool.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was really crazy. This game is like a miracle. I say that to everyone. It's a miracle, man, because we're doing a mess out there. The backstage was on fire, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we have enough art to make another game.
Yeah. Wow.
Things that we discarded, you know.
For sure.
Listen, you know, one of our favorite games as a podcast is Final Fantasy 13-2, which is made completely out of discarded things from Final Fantasy 13. So, you know, I'm on board.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
I want to jump back to a moment in the game, if that's okay, which is that the human-on-human fight at the end between Shade and Oyabun is so sick. And it was just this moment where I was just like jumping up from my seat and going like, hell yeah, finally. And really, you know, it's the same combat system, but because it's a sword fight and not a mecha fight, it feels different. And I was just wondering, were there ever any other human scale fights planned for the game, or was it always that Oyabun and Shade was going to be the one?
Yeah, I think that was going to be the only one, really, because mm-hmm. we wanted that impact, and we wanted it to feel different with all the animations and stuff as well. So
yeah. It really does. It's such a good moment. I loved that fight and just like all of the emotions around it. It was sick. It was so good.
I think two moments we had planned from the beginning was this fight with Shade and Six Shusai, and the other one was the Angel Breath one, where the robot, the mech, is red, right? Because my favorite mecha is Sazabi from Gundam.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved his design. And I first saw it in the music video for Linkin Park, you know, Somewhere I Belong. There's a part there where they show this Sazabi in there.
And interesting. I didn't know that.
That was the first time I saw this mecha.
Wow.
And I fell in love with it. Yeah. So, and also Angel Breath is the name of the grandma of our second programmer, because he was German and we wanted the mech to be German, the final boss.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we asked him for names and he said, well, my grandma is called Angel Breath. And I thought, well, hell yeah. That's a hell of a name.
And yeah, it is.
That it is.
Pivoting to like wrap up stuff, why don't you each tell me one interesting story from developing Wolfstride?
Right. Do you have any, Paulo? Because I'm trying to think here.
Man, I remember one, like when we were almost releasing the game, I think I sent some changes for the project on the cloud. And like I didn't know what I did, but like I fucked up really bad the things, and our programmers were like, oh, he destroyed the game. We won't be able to launch it. Oh my god. And Oto was like, oh, I think they are overreacting, you know? And I was like, so my anxiety was so high when that happened. But the programmers were able to fix it. I don't remember what I did. I just think I passed some changes that shouldn't be there. And that's it.
Look, mm-hmm. as someone who made a Git commit mistake last week that caused me to work like 80 hours the week before and almost torpedoed an $80 million deal, I get it. It happens.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's a harsh one. Yeah, I can say that before launch, I think it was the weekend before launch, right? And me and our programmer, Rolo, and also, I don't remember who was there, but I remember me and Rolo, we were there working. It was like 5 a.m. and we'd been working like since 6 p.m. that day. So we're crunching like crazy there and playing the game. Rolo was implementing stuff and I was testing the game out. And I swear to God, it was the weekend before launch. And it was the first time that I could just say, hey man, the game is not breaking anymore. Like, I can't play the game. I can't play the game. I don't believe this. Because most of the process, I swear to God, I was stuck on day 3 of the game for like 3 months. Because somehow the code didn't go through it, you know? So I could only play to day 3.
Oh, wow.
Even though I had made like all the configs for like 20 days or so, I could only play up to day 3. So that was that.
Wow.
It was a mess.
Yeah, you always hear stories in game development of like, oh, yep, it totally was broken until like right before we went gold. But hearing it from you, that's wild.
Software is always a flaming disaster until the very last second.
Yeah. We had so many blockers, yeah. Yeah.
What's one thing you each did in Wolfstride that no one would notice, but you're really proud of?
Do you have an idea, Paulo, of something that you did?
I think the no, but the animation that I liked most that I did for Wolfstride was the Godworm punch. I don't know if people noticed, but I put so much details, like when his jacket falls off his shoulder, like he's punching and his tongue is out and everything. I don't know if people like that, but I noticed that, but I like that so much.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't have anything like that. Like I wanted people to see. I think I just buried a lot of references there. If you look into the hospital room, you see something that I took from the 20th century boys from Naoki Urasawa. It's like the face of the sun for the future tower. It's a reference to a manga, but I kind of never wanted anybody to see that. It's just there, you know?
Yeah.
I think there are lots of stuff like that. Like I made at some point, you know, the band Win?
Yes.
So I made lots of references to Win.
Oh, and, funny.
And also, at some screenshots, there was a version of the bar that had the Bugnish icon there at the background. There was stuff like that. But I really don't mind. I think that my most precious moments are the ones where Shade is having deep conversations with Nebraska or Fancy Jack. And I think I saw reviews of people saying that they liked that the most. So I'm pretty happy about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, there are so many little references in the game, and I really like how a lot of them don't get loudly pointed at, you know? It's like there are a couple where it's like, hey, look, we are making this reference, but then there's a ton more that are just there. And if people see them, it's like, oh shit, I know that. But otherwise it's just kind of part of the detail of the world.
You know what? Explain to me the Apple Train. We got very hung up on the Apple Train at one point. Peepoo mentions the Apple Train.
The Apple Train.
Yeah, we're like, what the fuck is this?
I don't even remember what this is about, really. I barely remember.
That's okay. It will die a mystery.
I, I don't know if you noticed, but the video rent star there are a lots of references to movies. I think the easiest one to see is Spider-Man, like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But there are references to Jurassic Park and Reservoir Dogs. Mm-hmm. There are lots of movies there that it's kind of pixel art, so I think they only exist in my mind, but sure. They're there. Yeah.
So maybe it's like something to do with Pineapple Train.
Yeah, that was our closest guess, was like Pineapple Express type deal.
Yeah, Pineapple Express.
There's a reference to Pineapple Express. I don't know if you saw that movie.
I definitely saw that in the theater and was very disappointed.
Yeah, I think that's a reference to Pineapple Express in some way, because I love that stupid movie so much. Yeah.
That's all we have written down for questions. So why don't you tell us about Zetzillions? I have played a bunch, and I'm very sad that all the OP cards got nerfed.
Oh, yeah. So Zetzillions is a deck builder roguelike. We are trying to keep our style there. We are... and also the story. So the story for Zetzillions... is one that connects with Wolfstride in some way. Burying some stuff there, and I'm preparing things for the Fongum multiverse. So I plan on having different versions of her in lots of games, and that's the start for that as well. And now go ahead.
is she literally the devil?
Oh. Yeah, it can be.
Sure.
Wolfstride. I think this version for Zetzillions is other one. But this is a mystery I have planned to unveil at some point.
Amazing.
But,
okay.
Yeah. You'll see more of her and different versions of her and all that. So at some point, I plan to explain exactly what she is. But until then, great. I'm just mislead you guys to think other stuff, you know?
Great. I'm sorry. I interrupted you while you were talking more about Zetzillions. So please, if you've got more, continue.
Oh, yeah. So what I wanted to say is, I'm a huge fan of Slay the Spire, and I know for a thing that I am not the genius like the game designer from Slay the Spire, you know, because the guy is really good strategically. So what we're aiming for in Zetzillions is to make a game where people can have fun, explore and discover new things. I think our approach is more like Munchkin. I don't know if you guys played Munchkin.
Yeah.
But we really want to have that thing where you're always discovering new cards, new fusions to make, and some crazy weird stuff and bullshit that you wouldn't find in another game, you know? We want to have these really crazy cards. But right now in the demo, we don't have so much of that. But we want to work those numbers up and have lots of interesting enemies. The story for Zetzillions will also be fully voiced over. And I tried to give as much depth as I could, like Wolfstride story. So expect existential crises and some questions like that still, you know. I didn't take it lightly in that aspect, despite you being a commander and destroying like the whole universe. And like being a major asshole.
Yeah. That's really exciting to hear.
This card game sicko. There are some wild cards in there already.
Yeah.
Oh, our favorite card didn't make it to the game yet, but it is called Your Mother. And we are just stupid because we keep making jokes with that. So it's like, ah, I finally found your mother.
Or, can't wait to fuse with your mother later.
Yeah. So is there, people really are expecting that card, and the art is horrible. So, yeah, I can't wait to show it to you guys.
Yeah, can't wait to see it. Speaking of games like Slay the Spire, have you played Monster Train at all?
Oh, I think I didn't. I didn't.
If you have any free time during your development of Zetzillions, your ongoing development, and you can find it, I recommend it. It's very similar to Slay the Spire, and I really love both games, so it might be up your alley. But you know, no worries. If you know, sometimes I hear a recommendation and I'm like, eh, I'll get to it later, and then I never get to it. So my feelings won't be hurt. But
all right.
Yeah. Well, that's all the questions we had. Do you guys have anything else you wanted to say?
Well, yeah, I like to ask people to join our Discord, talk to us if possible. You know, we're always open to ideas, and I love conspiracy theories about Wolf's Ride and everything that we're doing. There was some crazy conspiracy about the names of the characters that have the letter G and W everywhere, and I loved it so much. I might even make it canon at some point.
That's rad.
Who knows,
that's
man? Great. I can rewrite reality for this game, so why not? Yeah, so that's it. I think join our Discord, talk to us, and yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you so much to both of you, Ota and Paolo. This has been great, and it was really fun to talk to you, and yeah, Chris and I really loved Wolf's Ride, and I'm not an early access person, so I have not checked out Zetzillions yet, but I know Chris has, and so I'm really excited to play it when there's closer to a 1.0 out there. It's on my radar. So again, yeah, thanks for coming on, and good luck to you in your continued development.
All right. Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us. It's been awesome to talk to you guys. I feel at home already. So, yeah. Very good.
Wonderful.